Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Anybody there with a disrespect to your surroundings, people? I have hit the record button as well because we might as well just go from here because I did. Obviously, massive thanks to everybody. One of the biggest responses that we've had so far. So humongous thanks to everybody for sending their questions in for the UBP.
I was going to say, Scott Telford, questions? What are we doing here? Who are we?
What's going on? This is the Entitled Banter podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
Disrespect your surroundings.
Where each week we disrespect our surroundings by asking you for whatever's going on in your life in regards to gaming, in regards to food, in regards to whatever else you can think of. We took a week off last week because I thought that we should dive back into our take trough of established questions because we get so many every week, which is brilliant. And then this week I was like, oh, we'll ask everybody what's going on, see what's going on in their lives. Lovely response, massive response. So there is another ton to get through, but it does mean the take trough forever overfloweth.
Yeah, but that's great because it's like the take teat we can constantly sup on until our bellies are full and swollen.
It's a teat waterfall at this point.
It is. Just, it's just like squirt it right in my mouth.
I will not do that, to be honest. It might be 12:39 p.m., but no, I'm not doing that. it depends how you go. But yeah, we do have a lovely selection of questions. Maybe we'll get through more than three. We'll see how we go.
Our pace
dictates itself. First question from Sawyer. Have you watched the Snyder Cut yet?
No, right. Okay, so I'm laughing already because of the fact I knew that this question was covered. It's like, because it's become such like a monumental thing. It is a monolith of expectations.
Yep.
I've been waiting for a few people that I trust to go and watch it because I'm sorry, any film that requires me.
Long.
Yeah. Any film that requires me to take a half day at work to watch is not like it's gonna be a marathon in every sense of the word.
I have a thing in me. I have a demon in me where I need to know what something is. Like, I'm just curious. I'll buy a game. I'll buy the ticket for the movie. I must know. Yeah. And I must know what this is. But it's 4 hours long. If it was two, because I was going to put it on. I've got it ready to watch. Like, I have access to it. I have it sitting there last night. And I was like, I could put it on. But I can't escape the fact that I was looking at the exit time, being like, well, if I start it now, I'm not going to come out of this until 1 a.m. Oh, no, I'm not going to come out of it until 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So I just was like, how do you fit a 4 hour thing? But I guess I do that all the time with games. I'm just like, I don't know.
I guess it's because it's a passive experience. Like, yes, you're engaged watching something, but when you're playing a video game, you are in direct control. You have complete agency over it. But my friend Mark, he is a diehard DC fan, and he defended the bad DC films to a hilt, and he even knew it. He was just kind of like, you know, when like the hill that you're dying on, like sort of thing. Like, it's a very common thing in what culture. Imagine him doing the same, but he's just kind of like, he's dying on the hill, but he's like, I know it's bad, but I'm doing it anyway.
But he loves it as long as he's got the conviction. It's fine, and I feel like that's who this is for. But I'm not that person. I forgot the absolute train wreck that we've had so far. I forgot about Martha. I forgot about Doomsday. I forgot about everything, and that was when Snyder was in control. Like, I want to be there. Like, having read the reality of what he went through, obviously his daughter passed away, it was really horrible. And then for him to come back and go, no, I am going to do this thing. And they give me the money for it. And that fascinates me, this nexus of like business, it lined up. Like, it's pure business interests to do the most directorial, like authored thing possible on the creative side. So he's just ran wild with it. And it's this 4 hour, it's in like 4:3 aspect ratio.
Yeah, it's quite wild, isn't it?
Most of it's in slow motion. And I'm just like, I just want to know what you've done with access to this stuff. But yeah.
But I'm so happy that it exists. Like for all of the fans, for all, for him personally, for just DC in general, it was one of those things where it became such a legendary thing that it kind of it felt like it was never going to happen. But so many people already wrote it off as like the Snyder Cut was going to be like the Duke Nukem Forever of the film world, where it was just going to be a wait for absolutely nothing.
The Chinese
but
democracy.
I'm really happy to see people resonating with this version and saying it's great. Mm-hmm. I will say, however, I could probably make a decent film if I was given 4 hours to tell it, because if you cut nothing, if nothing is left on the editing floor, the cutting room floor, then I could make brilliance happen, because it's like 1,000 monkeys hitting the typewriters. You're going to crack
like
gold
eventually. Something will line up.
Like, I am pleased to hear that they've resolved a lot of the plot points or like hanging plot threads. And I'm really glad to see that Cyborg's been given a better run this time around.
Yeah, he's actually a character now.
I will watch it, but it's going to be across 2 nights and I will split it in half.
Right.
And like
I think
my
that's
friends,
what I'm gonna do.
Like Mark said, like there is an actual distinct point where you could say, right, I'm going to leave this for tomorrow. Like it's a good cliffhanger moment. So
okay, because apparently it was initially sketched out to be like a part one and part two, and then that
which
now
makes total
it's just,
sense.
It's all just there. So yeah, I'm super curious. The answer to the question is no, but we'll get there. It is. It feels like because we're also so starved of new movies to talk about that, like this just being like plopped down. It's like, oh, you want something, do you? Well, here's 4 hours of a thing. Go sit through that and get some takes.
You can't. You have to feel a little bit because haven't they just announced that the Bucky, the Winter Soldier, and
Bucky thingy's out today? Yeah,
it's out today, isn't it? It almost feels like a little bit just kind of like, oh, we've also got something too. Don't forget about Marvel. Don't forget about Marvel. We just had this amazing WandaVision thing, but don't worry, we've got a second one here. Oh,
that was
look
the thing,
at this
like,
4 hour thing.
Yesterday when everyone's talking about the Snyder Cut, and then Marvel were like, we got the Loki poster. Do you want a Loki poster? Just sort of like, oh, we got this thing. Like everyone talking about, oh, you know, Tom Hiddleston, like whatever. Entitled gaming podcast, banter podcast. Well, just, you know, usually it's gaming. Next question from Rex Wolfley, regular person. Thank you very much, Mr. Rex Wolfley.
Thanks, Rex.
Recently finished Spiritfarer. Thanks for the recommendation. Found it a great tool for teaching my daughter, who played along as Daffodil's the cat, about grief and acceptance. Have you played any other games that taught you valuable life lessons?
Many. Like if you wanted to go for like the obvious one, you would go Dark Souls for never giving up. Like because
Dark Souls
that's
is strangely incredibly motivational. Yeah,
because it uses pain as a lesson, effectively. Yeah. Just going like, look, it's sometimes you will be facing immeasurable odds. You will not have the strength nor willpower, nor even the skill set to overcome these. But with help from people using summoning, by going and learning like where you are, your strengths lie, by specializing in certain things, you'll be able to overcome these things with ease further down the line. It's all about just trial and sort of what's it called? The perseverance of like the human soul. But
it's like, I remember reaching a point because Sekiro drills that down even more to the point, and you can't summon in that game. But the idea of just, if you just maintain your composure and just, you know, just learn when to press L1, you'll get through it. And I remember getting through each of those boss fights going like, well, if I just exhaled a bit, I probably would have got through that before and not freaked out as much. And like, I think that, like you said, it's baked into the Souls series way more, and Bloodborne too. But I just feel that throughout their games, that if you just steel yourself and just sort of like, like work through it. And
it's
there is a weird
calm.
Zen on the other side.
It's about like maintaining calm in the face of like sheer terror, effectively, in this example, because
and
if you're able to,
BS.
If you're able to look at something and not immediately panic, your rational brain will take over and you'll be able to make better decisions. I think that another game that taught me, maybe something that I personally didn't feel like I needed help with, but it's a great anchor point for many people's experiences that have played this. And we're about to get sad now, because we're going to talk about that dragon, that dragon cancer, which is, an unrelenting game of like how punishingly brutal it is. For those of you who've not heard about this game, it is about, it's not really a game as such, it's like an experience, virtual experience where you go through the life and follow the events of a family whose young son has got leukemia. And it's about his sort of like the parents' acceptance of it. It's about how they deal with it, how the frustrations and anger boil underneath, and eventually how they can start to look at what the time they had with him is more important than the time that they've lost because of the horrible disease. And I feel that that game teaches more than anything is just a huge empathy for your fellow man. Like I have lost family members to cancer. And I'm sure that tons of people listening to this would have been been affected by it. And it's a great anchor point to begin talking about your stories about loved ones, but also about connecting with other people, not just saying, hey, it's my turn to talk, but going, I feel and understand what that person went through. And therefore I can offer a different level of support than just going, okay, yeah.
I mean, I think like, that dragon cancer, I was just, an unbelievable show of strength, like from because it's coded. I think it's directly coded by the dad, but
it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's just to be able to channel everything that they went through into something that is even remotely interactive and can be released and just to get it out there. And obviously they won a bunch of awards for it and recognition for what they were able to do and everything. I just looked at that whole thing being like, that is it. I can't believe you were able to do this. Like, to
imagine sitting down at a computer station after the events that are obviously the real life events, the loss of your son, and sit there and code for hours and hours and hours to create a reference point for other people to play through. Like, that must have been heartbreaking on a level I can't even imagine. Like,
that's that's what I mean. Like, just being able to reapproach that material, their memories, is this the right thing to do? Like, I can't imagine what it was like going through that. And the thing I was going to mention, kind of alongside in terms of being like, you know, emotionally straining subject matter, is Firewatch. We just had this in the recent chatty face that's going up on Friday. It'll be on the YouTube channel. But in Firewatch, that game, that whole thing, that whole, I guess I'm not going to go into too many spoilers, but the general takeaway from that game is that you need to be able to grapple with the hardest things in your life. You can't just ignore them. You can't just sort of like compartmentalize. You can't, like, not over a long enough time period. Like, one of the reveals in that game shows you the ramifications of not directly addressing something over time to keep it vague as hell. But I apply that sometimes where it's just sort of like, well, I'm going to have to deal with this eventually. I can't, you know, I can manufacture a safe space. I can get through the day, but what is the week going to be? And what is the month going to be? And I'm going to have to face this thing. And so sometimes I channel that sometimes and just steer full long into the awkward thing and get it out the way, or at least tackle it, address it. It's always like, it's a wider thing, but I always find that something, if it's left to be more nebulous, is easy for it to spiral out of control because it's it's this big, crazy, oh my God, what's going to happen? Whatever. We're speaking so vaguely, but I feel like it should apply to a bunch of different contexts. Whereas once you start grappling with maybe an awkward conversation or an awkward interaction or an awkward transaction, anything, once you've made it real, it's nowhere near as terrifying, like in every single instance.
The concept and dread of inevitability is sometimes so much greater than the act of actually just facing your problems head on. Like, I totally understand that there might be people listening to this that are just going like, I can't face my problems head on. And that's completely fine. It takes time to understand where and how to pick away at a big problem. But just remember, you can speak to people about this. Like, that's, I know that we're talking in our usual banterish podcasting, but there is a message underlined here that we care about you guys as much as you clearly care about us. So
And we've been through these things too. Like, there's no massive, you know, there's no sort of like, it doesn't have to be a case of immediacy. It just needs to be a case of awareness that this is the thing you're pushing towards. I was going to bring a chocolate bar question in there. Just sort
We're going to have a little, it's like the sorbet experience to this. It's like you
it's
go in
a sorbet experience. I did have this, the one from the Gaming Nuke. This is all the chocolate question in here, but he's asking some other stuff too.
Okay.
How do you manage to juggle like six games on the go at one time without losing the comfort of knowing the controls / gameplay well or dropping out of the story? I've tried so many times, but I can only really focus on one game at a time. P.S. Favorite chocolate bar.
This has actually happened to me very recently because the fact that at the moment I'm juggling Sunset Overdrive, Doom Eternal, and I'm playing through, I've just finished playing through Obra Dinn. And the issue is that I went back to Doom Eternal the other day and picked up the controller and I was just like, I've forgotten the controls. I was like, and I'm playing through on a, is it Ultra Nightmare mode?
Oh,
like,
why are you on that for the first time?
Because I love tackling some games on their hardest in initial difficulty because I'm like, I will beat this game first time round. And I will feel so, and like, I'm not very far through the story. Don't get me wrong. I'm probably about, I'm four planets in or worlds or whatever, realms, whatever you want to call them. And I have had my ass kicked up and down every corridor, every sort of like arena.
I picked up the controller fast as well.
Yeah, and I picked up the controller and I was like, oh my God, I've forgotten how to do this. I can't even remember how you do like the grab when you jump onto the walls and stuff. And I'm like, oh no, I'm literally, and I was, and the spawn point was what an arena was right in front of me. So I just had to like learn trial by fire. I'm just like, no.
I do, because I do tend to juggle, like six games at once. I think because I've done it for so long now, it doesn't get me as much. But I remember when I started doing it back on the PS1 days, where if I was, it still kind of happens today if I'm playing multiples of the same genre. genre where, like you said, the controls will bleed over. I'll hit the wrong button. I'll hit what I thought was melee and I'll throw a grenade instead or something like that. But for the most part, it's not too bad. It's just, yeah, it's weird. I just sort of just leap in. Like I'm too curious for too many games at once. And I think because of the amount of things that we cover, I need to know all these things. Yep. And then at some point in there, subconsciously, something will bubble over and just take my attention. And that'll be the thing that gets finished first. But yeah, it's kind of like, was it Bart Simpson with that chalk that's like split into six chalks? So he's writing like six sentences at once. Yeah. They all get finished at some point, but they're all making their way through.
What's your favorite chocolate bar then?
Oh God, see, I let you go off gut feeling for this. And my mind went to a Twix, which is really weird. Ooh. Is that even classed as a chocolate bar? I've not really eaten much chocolate bars.
It's counted as a chocolate bar, I would say. But a Twix is not what I thought that you'd go for.
I didn't think I would go for that. But you know, when you just ask like a gut question and then your brain just surfs something. Maybe I'm just hankering for a Twix. But oh no, it's not. It's Kit Kats. Do Kit Kats count? Because it's
Kit Kats definitely count.
Because I'm planning on going to Japan this year. Lol, this year. We'll see. Potentially go to Japan this year. And there's a big old thing in Japan for different like bespoke Kit Kats.
The amount of them.
Like the matcha Kit Kats are great. You can get them in the West and stuff too. But I just love Kit Kats, love wafers, love Kit Kats. Give me that. Don't know why my brain didn't go there. I have a whole thing for Kit Kats. Just give me the Kit Kats, Jules Gale.
Before I was a vegan, I used to love myself a crunchy bar. Honeycomb. Oh. Chocolate.
With that fancy honeycomb stuff that you can get separately, the little golden nuggets.
That was nice. That was good.
The name of it is.
But nowadays, I think that I go for a thing called a Vago bar. I think it's
What's that? Is it made from the tears of God?
Yeah, pretty much. It's V. I think it's spelled V E G O.
Okay.
And it's it's hazelnuts. It's chocolate with hazelnuts in, kind of like a Nutella bar.
Okay.
But because it's coconut milk as the main thing, it's so creamy. It's literally like eating a solidified block of Nutella. It is
That might be... Every time you mention a vegan recommendation, I imagine you like Brandon Routh in Scott Pilgrim, where he's just floating in with his eyes glowing, just knowing better than the rest of it.
Milk and eggs, bitch.
Yeah, exactly. This is so cool. Like, this is what you need. And I'll check that out. I'm going shopping later on. I'll have a little bit of a look for the old vegan.
If you can get one of them, they're absolutely game-changing. Okay. Love them.
Next question from David Faulkner. Will gaming subscription models based on games as a service bring about the end of the $200 million monster games like Red Dead Redemption 2, Last of Us 2, etc.? I don't think so. I think if anything, relying on the backing of major publishers should only in theory embolden those creative choices, because right now the likes of Rockstar and Naughty Dog are massive anomalies, because and even CDPR, and look at these, obviously imploded in regards to Cyberpunk, but yeah, they're anomalies in regards to how much time they take making a big top tier, big budgeted thing. Whereas I think if they had the security of the backing of a major publisher and the likes of Xbox, in Bethesda's case, saying like, oh, well, whatever you make is going to be our next big thing, we're guaranteeing player numbers because it's on Game Pass. I would like to say that those things will start coming out more frequently. Although it's a separate thing, but I don't think we need games as ridiculously overblown and laboriously crunched to death as Red Dead 2 and Last of Us 2. If you look at the amount of time I polished off the leaf texture in the corner and you're never going to see it. I'd rather you made a new gameplay mechanic, to be honest. Like I like those games, but I want more of a focus on actual hands-on stuff.
I think that we can talk about Red Dead 2 now, spoiler free. We're way past spoiler territory. We can talk about it.
At
some point in the game, you unlock a huge portion of the first game that you can obviously go and like play around in. I would have preferred if that section there was just released as a piece of DLC further down the line, because the amount of man hours that was taken for that bit there probably would have actually meant that the game was much more confined and probably would have saved tons of people getting home on time, you know? Crunch,
If they split it where if you got the credits and they split it and just put that other bit out as free DLC, pacing wise that would have helped massively. But I think the whole question of like production budgets and everything else, like if you remove the risk behind the creativity side of it should free it up.
So it's the question asking whether or not we think that games are going to move towards like episodic or subscription based stuff where it's like games as life says, like is that what the question is?
Well, I guess I sort of took it towards like, the production cost, because you mentioned the $200 million monster games like Red Dead and stuff. But I guess, if you take it more down like an In Vogue sort of thing, it's like that idea of gaming subscription models. Like I went down the Game Pass PlayStation Now thing. Games as a service type stuff, like that idea of every game being a monthly rollout of different pieces of content, Avengers style.
Yeah.
whether that thing becomes more preferable.
That will become more prevalent in our gaming industry, only because of the fact that once you get your core game out there and you can piece bits into it, you want to get that game to market as quickly as possible because you stand to make the most money out of it in a long-term fashion. Yeah. It's not the best experience for the player because somehow getting in on the ground level means that you're playing the most inferior product of that title.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But people are so keen to play games as soon as they are able to. Look at the huge success stories of like Steam Greenlight stuff and all of the other early access titles. Like that stuff happens because people have paid for it to happen. Mm-hmm. And if I was a big publisher, I'm not going to lie to you, I probably would look at my game and just be like, cool, right, get the vanilla game out, 50% of it done, put it onto there, and we'll use that money to fund the later projects. Because in theory, it should result in a great product. It should result in a living, breathing title that will reward players by their actions directly impacting where the story goes. Say a specific mode in your first-person shooter game takes off. I would be more inclined, because of the games as live service model, to patch in more things that support that one game mode to flesh that out into its own thing. Whereas if I came out and said, okay, I've done my $200 million blockbuster game, and that one multiplayer mode is a tiny facet of what I thought was going to be like the much larger scope, then if everyone goes and plays that mode, I've wasted so much time. It's like,
It's so weird because there's so much to this, like in regards to like the, like what's the creative intent? Like, I feel like stories have kind of gone to the wayside at the moment because there's so much games as a service type stuff. There's so much of a reliance on what is ostensibly arcade based monetization models. Like, you know, you're paying for a little bit of a go. There's a bunch of microtransactions. There's multiple currencies. There's ways to maintain a game over months and months and months. And I miss the whole fully formed game, the fully formed story. Yeah. But I do wonder, because I do think this will take off to some degree, but I think it'll implode. There's only so many games as a service that the average person is going to be able to juggle.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be checking in with 10 different games every day.
You will make the gaming experience as a whole homogenous. Every game will start to feel the same. Because I'm not saying in my example where I'm making the video game and I go down that route, I'm not saying that I'm doing that for the artistic reasons.
Right.
I'm doing that because I'm in this version, Jules wants to make money. And that's the way that you make
Jules
money.
Jules Gill, but the Gill is the Final Fantasy currency.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Gil. So you're basically trying to deliver a product that people would pay for and keep paying for. And that does not breed development ingenuity. It doesn't breed new ideas. You're basically drilling down on what already works, or you're basically just saying, okay, if that does work, then I'm going to put my entire IP based around that thing. But if you and I wanted to create Scott and Jules, the emotional and rewarding video game, then yes, obviously it's going to take much more money, and as a result it might make less money because it's narrowing down on what people want, you know.
Also as well, like, can you even do a, you know, emotional and rewarding game over a 3-month period? Like, I'm curious about that. I think someone will make something like that, like tell a story over a few months. And I do wonder as well if this rollout model solves the problem of people not finishing their games. Like, there was all the statistics from I think earlier in this week where 50% of people finish Ghost of Tsushima, but only about 28% of people finish Red Dead 2, for example.
That's mad, isn't it?
But if you give people enough time to catch up, and then you get the next chunk and the next chunk, maybe. But I don't know. I fear for it. I see more publishers doing the example that you gave, where they're just chasing the money and monetizing the game mechanics arcade style. Because that's, stories are like this weird fad that we had in the 2000s. Like, hey, what if you cared about the characters? It's like, well, we didn't used to before Metal Gear Solid. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't trust them.
I guess the only example you could say of an episodic thing that tells a compelling narrative over a long time would be the Telltale series of like Walking Dead games and stuff like that, literally because they are episodes. But we all know what happened to Telltale.
That's the thing. That's the thing. I mean, it worked once and never again. And I mean, like, Square Enix have managed to do it with the Life is Strange games, but they're so few and far between, that idea of sort of doing a television style game. I don't know, I'm curious, but I just that idea of like monetizing, where the consumer can tell they've been given 20% of a product and they're waiting for more of it. That was the Avengers case, or is the Avengers case. I think that as a consumer base, we're too aware of it as gamers. But I'm curious to see what happens, I guess, this next generation.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule.
it's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Next question from Ruben Hot Beverage. I'm assuming the beverage is nice. Part of the name. Maybe beverages through could be an emoji. I don't know. I copy and paste. What's the best food when you have a hangover? Asking for a friend.
Ooh. I mean, you cannot go wrong with the classic full English fry up, can you?
No.
You've got your eggs, your bacon, your toast, your buttery toast.
No, my mouth it's water. Been so long because it was the 1 year lockdown anniversary the other day.
Oh yeah, it was.
It's been 1 year since we've been hammered in any sort of city based context, and then needed a hangover thing the next day. So it's been a while.
As much as I despise the people who run it, so the Wetherspoons vegan breakfast, man, yeah. that was perfect. That was. You go down there after a few social jars. You wake up in the morning. You're like, oh, head's a bit banging, mate. I'm gonna cycle down the old.
I'll take an extra few eggs, mate.
Me and Cleary used to do a Sunday runs. So if we'd gone out on the night before, or if there had been drinks or whatever happening, you'd wake up on the Sunday, feel a bit rough, go for this fun run thing, which is like 5K around the top of the park near where he lives, and then go for Wetherspoons breakfast afterwards. That combination will sort your hangover out. And like, this is the thing, starting those runs when you're feeling a little bit queasy on shaky legs. I remember going around the first day and like no shred of hyperbole here, looking at him like, am I going to be able to say something to him, or am I going to throw up? Like, I'm looking at him. He's like, yes, Jules. And I'm like, it looks like you have something to say.
You're practically like, you've got the little poison bubbles coming out of you, like when you're poisoning an RPG, just sort of standing there like, oh God.
It's, I'm just like flashing red every sudden.
Stuck in a stasis bubble. Yeah. A question from Steve, Big Steve. What's your game of the year so far? This is quite a hard question.
Big Steve, Mr. Big Steve.
There's only been, I don't know, five games of worth so far.
I was about to say, nothing's come out.
I guess, to be honest, if I'm going to use this as an excuse to shout something out that I love, there's a really, 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 really great game called The Pedestrian came out. It's on, I think it's on PS4 as well, but I played it on PS5. Very Moorish, really luscious little puzzle game. where you play as a little stick figure that comes to life in a sign. I think you start on a sketch pad. You just your little stick figure and you run between different surfaces. You go from like a, you know, you go to a safety sign and you go down. I know it sounds like I'm describing the worst thing in the world.
No, that doesn't sound fun.
It's brilliant. You just tap triangle to zoom out and you can move parts of the environment around to create different doorways and ladders and ways to get around the environment. So it is a puzzle game, but it's really, really lush. It has this awesome sort of like chill hop jazz soundtrack where like the sounds of the city behind you as you're sort of like solving these puzzles quite relaxedly. It's very Moorish, like it's very easy to just, you know, do one more puzzle and just keep going. And there is a really cool twist at the end as well as to what's actually been going on the whole time at the very end.
So I'm looking here at the release schedule for this entire year, and I can actually see three games here that I've played that I would say are in contention for Game of the Year so far.
Months. Yes.
For the first 3 months. I'd say that Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game complete edition that finally got resurrected. I'm counting that as a new game because it was obviously removed from storefronts worldwide for so long. Yeah. So we kind of have to really respect that it's back with a force. It's just a fantastic version of that game. Hitman 3 is exceptional, and I've been playing it on and off since its release, and I've been loving every moment of it. And the final one that has been released recently, for me at least, is the Persona 5 Strikers game, because it's Dynasty Warriors but in the set in the Persona 5.
I saw that. I'm so curious. I still haven't finished Persona 5, so I didn't want to do anything else because I hear it's set after the game.
Yes, that is the one point that really does irk me though, because it's like you've got a 500 hour game, right? And I'm basing that off of Gerard Kelly's The Completionist video. He like, spent like 500 hours or like 580 hours something to complete all of
it.
Because
I'm 90 into it and I still haven't finished
it. All of the DLC that was like the Royale Edition or the Royal Edition, whatever, came out. And then to have the thing say like, hey, did you enjoy the first adventure? Haven't got through it, mate. Well, you'll love the sequel that follows it. It's like, well, like I said, I haven't got, I don't even know who half of these characters are. Well, you'll get it. All your favorite characters. No, no, seriously, stop. And we've added in new characters as well and an even more complex story. No, please stop. I just want to bash buttons.
Well, that was the thing, because I looked at the gameplay trailer. I was like, oh, this looks like it plays really well. I like the look of the combat. But I don't want to spoil what's... But then, even looking at the trailer, I was like, well, I can tell they survived the thing that we're alluding to in Persona 5. And so, like, yeah, I guess that's the thing. But it's my fault for not getting through P5. I mean, it's been 4 years now. But maybe at some point...
I don't blame you, though. That's like, it's a long-ass game. And there's a lot of, like, bits in it which are like, if we're being honest, the palaces, they do get kind of worse as you go on through the game. And that's like, it really tests you. It's like, do you want to finish this game? Do you want to... You're like, oh, I kind of don't now.
That's the bit where it looks like a PS2 game, where it's just like there's like three art assets for each palace. Yeah. It's like you can hunker up against one of them, like a stealth thing, and it gets a little bit repetitive.
But if you're going to ignore the story mode for Strikers, it's brilliant, mate. It's just Dynasty Warriors, but with tons and tons of flash and extra bits of moves. And there's actually a much more complex moveset in there. And I think if they carried that across to a mainline Dynasty Warriors or Samurai Warriors game, it would be perfect.
I'm kind of hoping that a lot of JRPGs go down the route of the Final Fantasy VII remake, where you take
more combat oriented.
The music's great, but yeah, make it more. It's almost platinum style, but you can. I love the hybridization of you pause the action, like you're fighting full on style. You pause everything and you queue up a bunch of skills. You jump between your party members and then you regain time and then keep going. I feel like that's the perfect hybrid of turn based, menu based combat and all out action stuff.
That's why I was so disappointed almost when the first Mass Effect came out, because I remember reading in an article like ages and ages ago saying that that's what you've just described there was how Mass Effect was going to play when it came to combat.
It
kind of does, but it's really clunky. I mean, they fixed it a lot in 2 and 3. Obviously, they like improved it like immeasurably. It became a much more combat oriented game, but I really enjoyed that aspect of it. But I totally agree with you. If they can make it so that you can pause the game and do some like queue up some actions and then see them unleash and then move around.
Yeah,
fantastic.
And then ping back, let me do some backflip kicks and then like pause again. Like just it's the perfect hybrid, like I said, of both combat models and like a photo mode, just sort of putting like visuals in there that are really cool. Next question from Black Lives Still Matter. What is the number one upcoming game? Hell yes. Upcoming game you are most excited for. For them, it is Kena Bridge of Spirits. The art and music is just amazing.
Oh, that is a very good point. Ooh. Actually, I'm looking through the old release, upcoming release. I know which one it is because we sent the link to each other this morning.
My mind's good, so I definitely remember that.
Yours
is the Warhammer thing. Yes.
So obviously there's Warhammer Darktide, which is coming out very soon, which is basically Vermintide, but with guns. And obviously it's Left 4 Dead. So yes, I'm going to absolutely love that. But there's a new game that got announced like really recently, which is called Necromunda Hired gun, and it is basically Doom, but in the Warhammer Hive worlds.
It looks insane.
It just, and it's got cheesy British voice acting. Like, I could have done the voice acting. All right, Governor, there's one thing that you don't want to mess with, and that's the Goliaths. Oh, take you on, mate.
I think that's going to make it brilliant, like Dragon Quest style. Like, you've got this like quirky sort of English voiceover thing, or it'll be the thing that gets directly in the way, because I feel like it's so Doom, like in that reveal trailer. Like, running on the walls is like Titanfall, but it's so Doom. Like, aesthetically, it looks great.
The funny thing is, though, that is... I know that you haven't played like tons of Warhammer games, but having bad voice acting is kind of par for the course.
Okay,
everyone speaks in a language, not everyone, but the English that you hear in it is actually called High Gothic. And basically it's over the top. So it's like, brothers, the Emperor has decreed that we shall sally forth and take on the Elder.
Yeah, I'll totally take that. That's like Fable style.
But the ham is so thick. It is like gammon level thick. It is big ham.
John Ham. I think, the Warhammer game looks great. I would totally back Kena Bridge of Spirits. I'm curious about, where the story goes in Horizon. I hope God of War still makes it this year, but I don't think so. Yeah. But I'm an absolute sucker for animation, just any Pixar styles of Kung Fu Panda, as I mentioned, on the daily.
yep.
And so Kena Bridge of Spirits just looks gorgeous, and it's made by the animation team that did the Majora's Mask short, which if anybody hasn't seen, just Google Majora's Mask animation. It's really lush. Both those games look pretty cool. A question from Brian Jackson. Since we're talking about music, this is in reference to I tweeted saying, does anyone want to weigh in on the Day to Remember album, which is what we were on about when we were in the middle of recording the intro. Since we're talking about music, best gaming soundtracks, I think Doom, Persona 5 Royal, and Death Stranding. Thoughts?
I cannot.
Death Stranding's very high.
I cannot disagree with a few of those choices there, because they're all impeccable, but I'm going to have to give a big shout out to some Final Fantasy games, because they have impeccable music. I mean, I know that everyone has a huge soft spot for Final Fantasy 6 and 7 when it comes to their soundtrack, but for me, 8 had this beautifully dreamlike and crazy, like schizophrenic almost, soundtrack. And especially,
I don't know where we were the other week when we were rocking out to the Triple Triad music. But
that's banging. That's absolutely banging, that is. But I absolutely love, like, hands down, if I was to select my all-time favorite track from any Final Fantasy game, it's the Man with a Machine Gun. It is
I don't even know how that goes. I don't know which one you mean, but
right. Okay, I tell you what. Like, I know that you can't hear it on the thing. Can you put it on? Can you put it on while we're talking? I'll vamp for the audience.
Man
with a Machine Gun.
Okay,
man with a machine gun.
Your thing. Yeah. So tell them about Final Fantasy stuff.
Yeah. So it's the song that plays when you're doing the Irvine. Is it Irvine flashbacks? What's it? What's his bloody name?
Okay.
Are you playing it now?
Yes. As soon as you said Irvine, I was like, right, okay. It's been so long since Final Fantasy VIII was a thing. This is really sweet. This is like a synth wavy.
It slaps this song. It is so
good.
The
way you did it with your little air drums, your little bass that you had was a little bit more twangy. I was expecting more country stuff, but no, that's all slid back into place, and what a tune.
What about you though, Scott? What's your favorite?
Best gaming soundtracks. I mean, it's got to be Hotline. It'd be Hotline 1, Hotline Miami 1, Hotline Miami 2. And then it would be the old GTAs, the original trio. Mainly San Andreas, just because it's such a blend of like incredible music. Like on the rock side, there's all the Leonard Skinner stuff and Guns N' Roses, but then there's all the rock stuff. All the rap stuff. Mm-hmm. And Rockstar, like, they haven't delivered a soundtrack of that quality in quite some time for me.
No.
And I feel like that comes from them picking a specific time period and then picking the best songs of an entire decade. Vice City and San Andreas soundtracks for me would be sky high.
They're so good as well. I'm trying to think of, what's that? Payday 2 also has an incredible soundtrack.
Okay.
Tons and tons of sort of like lo-fi like club beats in it. Like if you're into sort of like EDM stuff, then that's definitely the
major shout. Next question from Stephen Curtis. How do you eat crumpets? I go cold with chocolate spread.
Right.
Apparently that's weird.
No, I saw that and I was immediately, I got my heckles went up. I was just like, the chocolate on it, fine, mate. But when you want to start bringing in the cold crumpets. Just, you might as well just eat a door wedge, because it's just like, it's thick, it's spongy. It's just like, what's the point of it?
It's spongy.
Heat it up, pop it in the toaster, even if it's just a little wee chef's kiss for about 10 seconds or so, just to warm up the cockles on it, mate. It's just, you look at a crumpet and it looks like a membrane, doesn't it?
It's like a sponge.
Yeah, it's got all of the, like, the holes and like the divots in it. But the thing is that if you go in there cold, they're all compressed. When you put heat to it, they expand a little bit. They grow. They live. They breathe. And that allows.
I've got a friend who, I forget what you call the specific fear. I think it's tryptophobia, the one where it's a fear of multiple spaces all next to each other. And it's a very strange, very specific phobia. But she's terrified of like underwater sponges or sponges in general,
really?
Or crumpets. And so every time I think of crumpets, when you're describing the surface of them, I just see her recoiling in fear because it's just so. Like, oh god, it makes my skin crawl because there's so many little holes next to each other. If you want to freak yourself out and see if you have tryptophobia, nice little bonus game for you in between the podcast, Google tryptophobia. It's T-R-Y-T-O phobia. And see if you're also terrified of multiple small spaces next to each other. Or try to eat a crumpet.
Imagine if there's a percentage of our audience now that's just like,
that's the exact response to it. Because I don't have it specifically, but it is freaky as hell, especially when some of the images people have made to test you are pretty minging. How do you eat crumpets? A lot of butter on them.
A lot of butter. I mean, some people want to go down the sweet route and put jam on it. I'm more of a Marmite guy. Chuck a bit of Marmite on it.
Never even crossed my mind to do anything other than butter because I just think of a buttery crumpet.
English
right now.
Wow. Yeah. This thing, I was about to say, if you want to go absolutely insane, then you treat your crumpet like a hot scone. And then that way, you put it in the toaster, right? It pops up. You put a little bit of the old clotted cream on it. You put some jam on it. And what have you got there? You've got a hot, sweet treat where the cream is melting inside into the pores.
I will say that I didn't even try crumpets for a long time because they're such
I'm not surprised.
They're this such is a every, top food. They're such a high-end thing.
They're like 50p down Tesco's for a pack of eight. How are they?
It's what they represent. They're like the queen eats crumpets, like this sort of like the, you know, the pageantry. They're all the
queen does not eat the bloody crumpets that I do, mate. She probably has them like has them made out of her own servants' faces.
I remember finally having a crumpet at sort of like age 25. You know, a bit of a night out, sort of a bit of a pre-drink, bit of a pre-sesh. Someone got the crumpets out, and I thought, what have I been missing, lads? Like this is.
I can imagine that. Imagine Scott in like a Skins episode. There's all the drugs being racked up. There's all these people like drinking like massive liquor bottles, and then Scott in the middle just kind of like, oh, this party's bumping. It's pretty good, but it really missing something. Then somebody walks in, silver platter, opens it up, line of coke on one side, tons of crumpets on the other. He's like, "I've at you, mate."
Warburton's crumpets all the way, mate. For the next question, we're going to end on some very, very lovely things. That a couple of comments from some regulars. So thank you both very much. First is from Laughing Sunbro. Want to say that the UBP is a weekly spot of joy in a time when lots of things suck. Really appreciate you guys, and I suspect I'm not alone in this. Keep it coming, and thanks for being just genuinely nice folks. Well, thank you very much, but you've not seen us play Dark Souls. You've not seen us play competitive things where we lose our collective rags.
You've not seen Scott lose at Crash Team Racing.
I forget about that. I forget. I push it down. I sit on it. I put it away. That did not happen. It isn't.
Address your problems head on, Scott. This is what we were talking about early.
But again, we didn't talk about immediacy. And in this case, my immediate time window is 20 years before I'll think about that again. Next little sort of comment from Jacob Wright also said UBP, UBP.
UBP.
Just want to say thank you for the nonstop content. Really has helped me through lockdown and made me love gaming even more. So thank you as well. Their question was, which underrated PS1 game would you like to see remade/remastered? Theirs is Ape Escape or Croc.
Now, you are totally bang on the money with Ape Escape there, my friend. But can I take that Ape Escape and offer you a side of Silent Bomber?
Bomber we talked about Silent Bomber. I
will never not stop banging on about how good. So it is the perfect 6 out of 10 game that is a 10 out of 10 in my eyes.
I remember loving it. Even the way that thing controls, like sometimes when you go back to old games and it's like, man, this just feels weirdly retrospectively fresh because, or retroactively fresh because it's like a third person top down. Dungeon crawler style
kind
thing.
Of is yeah.
You're sort of laying bombs down behind you as you're running around a little bit. Like
I just love like it's like throwing the bombs and they all have like different abilities. You got like vortex bombs, napalm bombs and stuff like that, and plus the soundtrack is brilliant and the character design is just so ridiculous because you play as a guy called Utah Fate and he's got sideburns that are so long that they've begun to dreadlock at the bottom, so he's got like a big he's got like claggy dreadlock sideburns. It's brilliant, and he's just like every time it goes into his dark and horrible past it cuts back to him being sent out on a mission, and he's being like, Utah, you've got to bomb that building over there. And he's like, I can do that. I'm hardcore. And he like bombs the building, and these civilians run out, and he's just like, oh no, I'm a dickhead. I've killed women and children. Love him.
And then you got a 9-part episodic series that was really good in episode 8, but nothing else was any good. Yeah, I see exactly how that went down. My thing would be Ape Escape. Yeah, I mean, I've been playing Ape Escape 2 on PS5, which runs like hell. I put a tweet out showing, like, because there are some PS2 games that if you bought the, you know, you bought the PS2 game, you play it on PlayStation 5, there's some stuff where as you boot it up, there's a Sony blurb thing that just says you may experience some problems when playing this game.
Nuts.
And what they mean by that is none of the game actually loading properly. It just blips in and out of reality. Like all the mesh models, all the environments, all the characters, even the logos on screen flash on and off all the time. It's
that's
a mess. It is an absolute mess. So yeah, that would be, I mean, that's Ape Escape 2. That thing that I just described is also the case with The Warriors, which sucks. Me and my wife are going to go through The Warriors and then we can't. So that stuff really, really sucks. But yeah, I would take like an Ape Escape. I think they did 3 of them. I mean, there's 3 main ones.
Yes, there's ones. And they had some PSP ones as well, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm totally going to get the Vita one just because I want to catch some apes. I'll tell you what though, in Ape Escape 2, I did catch an ape that was bouncing on a jet of water on top of a fountain. And do you know what his name was? He's bouncing on the water. Do you know what his name
was?
He's called B-Day.
Amazing.
Because they know exactly what they're doing.
It's on a B-Day. Yes.
Just absolutely nailing it. But that studio is the one that's been shut down by Big Bad Sony. So more Ape Escapes in the future. Classic. We'll have to see how we go. But yes, thanks again to everybody for all the questions they sent in. Massive response. And we'll try and get through some more next week. We might ask for more questions. We might go back to the take trough. There's a ton, Jules Gill. For now, though, this has been the UBP.
The UBP.
I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
We'll catch you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.